menacing.
It sounds amazing. Game of Thrones, the eighth and final season, kicks off on HBO on Sunday. And for the longest time, Jor, I resisted watching this. My youngest son, my Navy son, Brett, said, "Dad, you got to watch it. It's one of the best things on television." And I finally broke down. And once I watched one or two episodes, I was hooked.
I know. It's probably the last person on Earth who hasn't seen it. But Handsome Husband and I are kind of saving it for when we can really get into it.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's worth making the time and the investment. And with us to talk a little bit more about why Game of Thrones is such a cult hit with so many people, what puts it in a different orbit, is Dan Feinberg. He is a reporter for The Hollywood Reporter. Dan, thanks for joining Jordana and me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, I mean, you and I could each have three or four clones, and we would never be able to watch all of the amazing television. This really is the golden age of TV with some amazing series. What really has made Game of Thrones a notch or two better than just about everything else that's out there?
And one of the funniest things is that there's so much current TV that's been airing for the past 2 months, and I know dozens of people who have dedicated the past 2 months to nothing but rewatching Game of Thrones.
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Everything else.
You're right.
Wow.
You're right.
It is a degree of commitment that is very impressive. I think the answer is hard to put a finger on because you look at Game of Thrones, and what's immediately notable about it is how many different ways it could actually scare viewers off. There are viewers who don't care for fantasy. There are viewers who say, oh, it has too much violence. There are viewers who say, oh, it has too much sex. There are viewers who say, I don't get HBO. I can't afford it. There are all of these barriers of entry. And yet somehow I think those things also probably combine to make it this show that is both at times a guilty pleasure, at times marvelous, fantastic, literate TV. It's kind of all things to all people, except not for kids.
No, absolutely not for kids. No. And there's been talk, could they do a PG version of Game of Thrones? I think it would probably not be possible, not be realistic, right?
There would be very little point. I mean, I don't know if you remember when they re-edited The Sopranos for A&E a couple years ago, and they did the same thing for Sex and the City on TBS. Those were not the same shows once you took away the good parts.
Absolutely. So,
Dan, tell me, as somebody who doesn't watch the show, and I know I have to, and I will, I will, maybe in the summer when the kids are at camp, something like that. I definitely will dedicate some time. But what is it about this theme of show, this genre of show, that's connecting with television viewers today? We're sort of past the sitcom era, and we're into sort of a new genre of TV. What do you think it is about Game of Thrones that connects with so many viewers?
I think it has a lot of different elements that probably check a lot of boxes for a lot of different people. Some viewers simply like that it's a big epic fantasy show with dragons. It can be as simple as that for some viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Other viewers say, oh, I don't really like that kind of show because those shows tend to be sort of male-dominated and they tend to marginalize female characters. But Game of Thrones has an assortment of wonderful female characters.
Very strong characters, yes.
Yeah. The female characters at the end of the day are better in most cases than the male characters. So you're getting another audience there. There are some people who simply like that, it is violent and it is sexy and it is cool. But at the end of the day, it's also a very basic kind of struggle for power show. And that's as old as Shakespeare, it's as old as Greek tragedy, it's very primal stuff, and we're in a world in which a lot of people find it very, very hard to watch the power struggles that are playing out actually on our TV, on CNN and MSNBC, etc., and there's a comfort to the fantasy realm in which similar things are playing out, but it's all fantasy.
You're right. I mean, it is the sort of push-pull, the tug of war when it comes to honor and loyalty and oaths and love. And you see the conflict play out over and over again, and the actions that these characters take have obvious consequences. In some cases, some of the most beloved actors get, wiped out. And I think that's been the source of a fair amount of vitriol over the years. Some of the fans really don't like who they killed off. Yeah. But
and that's part of why people watch, is the show is absolutely vicious.
Yeah.
And there are so many shows that don't care, that don't kill off the characters who people like, that are kind of tentative. You know, they don't want to alienate the fans. Game of Thrones doesn't care. Game of Thrones is happy to kill anybody at any time, and that makes it unpredictable and it makes it fun.
I have a question. The winter is coming, the White Walkers. Is that a veiled or not so veiled reference to climate change? Has anybody ever gotten a straight answer?
There have been many articles written about the idea that this is a climate change allegory, the idea that the whole point of the story is, oh, these humans are fighting and they're bickering and they're killing each other and destroying each other. And the real threat is simply the seasonal change. You know, the real threat is this unstoppable kind of winter force. And, you know, I think it can absolutely be read as a climate change allegory. I think that is one of the things that the show is. I don't know that I would necessarily personally say it's the, you know, the primary thrust of it, but without a question, it is one of the undercurrents that makes it relatable, even though, again, there are giant dragons and there are zombies beyond a gigantic wall, but
yep,
there is still something that is relatable about it.
We're getting texts that say, my son is having a Game of Thrones party, found a Game of Thrones cookbook and making recipes for it. I guess there's a cookbook. Dan, what do you predict for this season?
I predict that no matter how it ends, some people are going to be very unhappy. Other
yeah,
people will be thrilled and they'll go around saying, told you so. And we're all going to watch every second and keep talking about it one way or the other.
It's worth investing the time.
Before we let you go, we were talking earlier in the show about the $6.99 a month Disney Plus. Do you think that will give Netflix a run for its money?
I think it will, in a general sense, be a very compelling force, and I think it will cause Netflix to make sure it continues to up its game. Definitely, I was vaguely surprised by both all of the content that Disney Plus is prepared to have basically from the beginning, and then that price point is way lower than I would have predicted. It seems, at least on the surface, like it's a fantastic deal. And I went into the big investor call yesterday a little bit on the fence, I guess, about whether it was going to be something I was going to need. And by the time they got to the price point, it probably wouldn't have mattered what they charged. I was all in.
Yeah.
And then they said $6.99. I'm like, oh, you got me easy. So
It almost seems like they're giving it away under cost here just to buy up market share and to put the fear of God in Netflix.
Sure.
And maybe they've done just that. I think Disney's stock went up significantly. Netflix came down. So we'll see how this plays out. There may be enough eyeballs for two powerhouses. And I guess Disney and Netflix would probably be the two biggest, right, at the end of the day?
Warner Brothers is in the process of mobilizing for their own streaming site, and they will have all of the various Warner Brothers DC superhero content.
Ugh.
They'll have all the Harry Potter content. As soon as they can get it back from Netflix, they'll potentially have Friends. So Warner Brothers has the library that makes them capable of competing with those other two. It's just one service after another, and customers both benefit because obviously it's a lot of great content and it's easier to get than ever before. But everyone who went to all the effort of cutting the cord in the
mm-hmm.
past couple of years and being like, ooh, I'm saving so much money, at the end of the day, no one's saving money on anything. It's just more services.
Ay, ay, ay. Hey, Dan, thank you so much for your perspective and context. We sure appreciate it. Dan Feinberg, TV reporter for The Hollywood Reporter. Wish you the best. Let's keep in touch, sir.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dan.
You bet. Do we have to talk about the weather?
Winter is coming.
Winter?
No, winter is going.
No, summer is coming.
Summer is coming.
Please read the script.
No, winter is going. We want winter to be going here, but it doesn't feel like
Although
it.
Although I swear I saw a few White Walkers on my backyard
today. It
would
be worse if you saw snow on the Doppler, so let's not discuss.
The snow is winding down. Spring is busting out. We'll have the details when we come back next. Can we just listen to this for maybe five, six, 7 minutes?
Is there something you don't want to tell us about the weather?
There is a chance of more snow next Thursday. Okay, I just said it, all right? I'm sorry?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
No, I looked at the European model, which sucks a little bit less than some of the other models I look at.
Are you kidding?
Did you hear my plaintive wail at about 1:30 this afternoon?
No, señor! That was me.
I mean, you're really, really poor.
But again, you do realize that We don't make this stuff. We are, Jor, we are bewildered spectators. We are reluctant messengers. We would much rather talk about warm fronts.
It's going to be like April 17th.
Yeah. What's your point? Yeah.
So how much snow are we talking about?
We don't know yet.
We don't know.
And it may not snow. But there is a chance at the tail end. This would be the middle of next week.
Okay.
Starting
will
as rain Wednesday.
Will all this be gone first?
I think most of it will be gone. There will be a few piles left.
Okay.
So it's Mother Nature's way of replenishing the piles.
Thanks, Mama Nature. Suck it.
Well, there is that. So here's the deal. You heard about the state of emergency, 64 counties, 3 tribal nations. I have friends and relatives calling me. Have you had anybody emailing you just to make sure you're okay?
No,
that's always a little jarring when, hey, I was watching the Weather Channel and are you guys okay out
there? I had that during the polar vortex this year, but not that. They're over us. As long as they're not affected. My family out east, I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
Just say we don't get hurricanes. Although some days... Yeah, it was almost like a snowy, icy hurricane yesterday.
It was bizarre weather.
It was crazy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Marshall County, one of the hardest hit counties in northwestern Minnesota. The town of Oslo, the National Guard rescuing residents as the north flowing Red River continued to rise. Freeborn, Maurer, Steele counties in southeastern Minnesota hit very hard again. The Guard was out rescuing motorists. Shelters had to open up in many of the hardest hit areas. And at last report, I don't have an updated number yet. Most spots in the metro got about 6 to 10, mm-hmm. which is pretty close to what we were actually predicting, amazingly. 76.2 for the winter. 76.2. Average is 54.
I have the snow boobs back at the end of my driveway.
Excuse me?
Because we had to plow. But they're just like A cups now.
You know,
they used to be like D cups.
You need to go
to urgent
52
care. Ends,
52
right?
ends earlier in the year. And now it's like a training bra.
Snow boobs.
They're back.
Where do you come up with
they're
this?
They're back. It's what they look like.
11th snowiest winter on record. We had 78.3 last winter. 76.2 this winter and counting. I hope we're done, but who the heck knows?
Oy.
But the two winters before that, we were like 32 and 34 inches. So increasingly, it seems like it's all or nothing. It sets up either you get a tame, mild winter or you get the snot kicked out of you. By the way, the snowiest, you weren't here for this. The snowiest was 98.6 inches back in 83, 84.
I was not here. I missed that.
That was a wild. It was my first winter here at Care 11.
Really?
And I remember just shaking my head.
Was Lori like, what did you do? Why are we
Where
in this
have
place?
You brought me?
Yes. That's insane.
But again, boasting rights for America.
Okay.
Anybody has a weather story, you can top them.
That's a lot of snow, man. Wow. What do you think is going to happen to Julian Assange's cat?
Is the poor little cat still in the apartment or
Remember,
still in the embassy?
This is the Ecuadorian embassy in the UK was where Julian Assange has been since he was hauled out like yesterday's garbage yesterday or 2 days ago at this point. So he had this cat that was causing all this trouble and the cat and or not the cat was causing trouble. He wasn't cleaning up after the cat, like wasn't emptying the litter box. And the Ecuadorians were... That's what you call them, right? Ecuadorians?
Yes.
Ecuadorians were complaining about the fact that he wasn't taking care of the cat and that he was a terrible house guest. Well, now that Julian got the boot, what happens to the cat?
Inquiring minds want to know.
And you will find out when we go way beyond the headlines, and that's after the break.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're worried about the cat, aren't you?
I'm mortified. What happened to that cat?
Julian Assange hauled out of the Ecuadorian embassy from the UK. But remember, he had a cat that was making a mess. He wasn't cleaning up after. The cat, by the way, had Twitter and Instagram accounts with more followers than me. 35,000 followers on Twitter and Instagram. So will the cat's asylum end too? Will the cat be okay? People want to know. The fact is the embassy did respond to media requests that say the cat has been gone for months, that it's not here. They wrote, we are not a pet store, so we do not keep pets here. Actually, it was told to one of the media outlets that said Assange gave the cat to a family member after the Ecuadorian embassy threatened to take the pet to a shelter when he wasn't cleaning up after it. So no one really knows where the cat is. We're hoping that he is with a non-criminal family member of Julian Assange and that he is safe and has found asylum in a new home.
Will you please keep us up to date on that story and interrupt programming whenever we get updates on that? Okay. Our listeners can decide the best gig on the planet, or maybe not. Would you take a job where you're paid $1,000 a month to do nothing but smoke weed?
Oh, well, if I got high, I would, yes.
Kyla Gerber has what some, not all, consider a dream job. She gets paid $50 an hour to smoke weed.
It's a pretty good job.
She's 27. She responded to a posting from a Toronto-based company which was seeking expert-level connoisseurs.
How did they judge
to
that?
To smoke and review strains of weed and get paid $50 an hour.
Wow.
8 people were selected to make up the Cannabis Curation Committee.
Wow, that's a sweet gig.
Yeah, they test products, they evaluate the strains, smell, density, look, taste, flavor, effects. A couple of hours afterwards, they write all this down.
Really?
So it's not just sitting in your sofa and watching Netflix.
So it's like a critic.
You're
a connoisseur.
Exactly. You're a critic.
A weed critic.
She claims that she started smoking weed at the age of 15, found it alleviated her fibromyalgia and irritable bowel syndrome, including muscle and nerve pain, issues with food consumption, and sleeping problems. It wasn't until she got into her 20s, Jor, that she got more into the nuances of strains and then later CBD. So.
Wow. Sounds like she found the perfect job.
$1,000 a month.
Police are finding it more difficult to chase anybody in Jackson, Mississippi, because the wheels are being stolen off of their cruisers.
That's not good.
3 police cars had to be towed last week after the wheels were taken. Cars were parked behind a police museum downtown at the time of the crime. Now, this has happened before. A cruiser parked at the police academy last month lost 2 tires. Another one parked near a tiny house, and they say thieves took the tires of the car and then drove off with the entire tiny house as well. I guess they hooked up a tiny house too.
Jeez.
But it sounds like a joke on the police, you know, taking your wheels so you can't fight crime.
Can't
find them. So
get on your bicycle and chase me.
I don't know how you stop that?
Okay, I think this guy has the best job in the world, hands down. His name is John Harrison. He is a professional ice cream taster.
Another critic.
He works for Dryers. That is a Nestle-owned ice cream company in Oakland, California. Every day, he starts his day at 7:30 in the morning. He gets out his spoon. Then he begins tasting. He typically samples 20 flavors a day, with each flavor hitting his mouth 3 different times. One sample from the start of the batch, one from the middle of the batch, one from the end. He checks for consistency, texture, and flavor. And Dryers, the company, believes that Harrison's taste buds are special. Harrison protects his taste buds. He avoids spicy food, peppers, and onions. He neither drinks alcohol nor smokes.
Sure, that makes sense.
To keep his taste buds in perfect working condition. And this company, Dryers, insures his taste buds for $1 million. By the way, If this guy says that the ice cream isn't up to his standards, Dryers donates the entire batch to local food banks.
Ooh, I like that even better.
So that sounds win-win.
That's a good job.
Yeah.
For sure. Are you going on the meatless revolution? Have you had the meatless Whopper?
I'm going to give it a try. I still like a good burger, and I still like a good steak.
I don't blame you. So do I. But we told you last week, that we're 2 weeks ago now, that Burger King is going with the Impossible Burger,
yeah,
the meatless
version
of the Whopper. Well, now McDonald's is feeling the heat. More than 160,000 people have signed a petition calling for McDonald's to add a meatless option to the menu. In fact, McDonald's has tested a McVegan in Finland and Sweden and put it on the menu at its headquarters in Chicago. Reviewers said it's worth a try. It isn't really available in the U.S. other, of course, than the Chicago the Chicago store right now, but I would do it because there's nothing for me to eat at McDonald's. We used to go to Burger King as a kid because we used to eat the fish sandwich because, you know, I don't eat meat outside of my home because I'm kosher, but I can eat fish. So we used to eat fish there. But at McDonald's, there was never an option like that. So I would totally try it.
Does it taste like a McShingle?
I
Okay. A hospital in China reportedly played pornography in its waiting lounge by accident in front of adults and children.
Oh, boy.
Horrified patients had to flee the room. This was a dentist's waiting room in China after seeing erotic footage appearing on a TV screen. Police were called to investigate the case at this Chang'an Hospital in Dongguan, China. And what I found interesting reading
this
story.
Was that the name of the porno
Dongguan,
or is that the name of the town?
It's
the province.
It's the town of Dongguan.
Got it.
Appropriately. And I didn't know this. Porn is strictly illegal in China.
Oh, well, then that's bad.
People who produce, reproduce, publish, sell, or spread pornographic content can be sentenced to, wait for it, life imprisonment in China, depending on the seriousness of their crime.
Oh, that dentist is done.
Wow.
I can see why people were fleeing the room. They don't even want to get caught watching it. Wow.
Ouch.
You know the Trivago guy? That super sexy guy who sells hotel rooms?
If you say so.
I know. He's a little bit sexy. He's like the closest thing we have to like a Marlboro man right now. Or the brawny guy. Lumberjack.
I think most of our listeners would recognize
this
dude.
The Trivago guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of grayish hair. Yeah. Salt and pepper hair.
Well, unfortunately, he got charged with a DWI. He was arrested in Houston this week and charged with driving while intoxicated. He failed a field sobriety test, and the officers found him passed out behind the wheel of his car with his foot on the brake, which is a little bit sad. And I really like him and really unfortunate. So I'm sad about that.
Yeah, well, hey. We're human. We all make mistakes.
They might be looking for a new pitch man. I mean, a mistake like that will cost you your gig.
Ouch. Hey, I'm a car guy, and I've told you, this whole thing with Motorworks BMW, where I get to sample the cars and talk about them and make a video, talk about them on the air. I drive them for a week or two. Mm-hmm. It's like The Bachelor, only with cars.
Right? You don't have to marry one at
the
end.
Less mess, less fuss. Yeah, and it's like you try it for a week or two, give it back. The beauty, of course, is that anybody can do that. It's not just me. You want to test one of these out? Anyway, GM teased the new mid-engine Corvette, which is going to be formally released on July 18th. The new Vet is expected to go on sale next year. It's the eighth generation of America's greatest sports car and the most radical engineering change since the first Vet debuted back in 1953, because the engine moves from under the hood to tucked between the passenger compartment and the rear wheels. It's mid-engine, the middle of the car. The scoops in the front pull in air for the engine, which is reported to be a version of the current Corvette's V8. Nearly all of the world's fastest and most maneuverable sports cars have their engines behind the passengers. Again, the layout improves handling. It puts the engine's weight in the middle of the car. So this new Vet, it looks pretty amazing. There's some shots of it in camouflage. And
it's cool.
It is.
I love a Corvette. My dad used to have a Corvette when we were really little before he had to get rid of it so he could schlep us all around. But I'm partial to Corvettes.
Oh,
it was yellow and it had the T roofs and it went up. It was really cool.
Yeah. Beautiful car.
Yeah, it was fun. Right now it's 4:45. That's a Wixon Jewelers time check. Visit the custom jewelry experts at Wixon Jewelers for exquisite jewelry that's handcrafted in-house and designed exclusively for you.
Paul and Jordana and the one and only Michael Max.
Hello.
No Twins game tonight, man.
No Twins game.
Snowed out.
And what does that do to the team? When they get a snow day, I mean, most of us are like, yay, hooray, a snow day. But I bet you it's not that way in professional sports, right?
It's strange because you get taken out of a groove. Last year they had to deal with this. Think about this. This is probably the only Friday night they'll have off for 6 months. Because you never have a Friday off day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the good thing for them was they knew it was coming. They had lunch in the day. They were able to go hit if they wanted to hit, do whatever they wanted to do, so they could take advantage of a day like today and yesterday to really get moved in. That's the upside of it, I guess. But they'll play tomorrow, and they'll get it going. Last year, they went through the same thing, and, you know, doubleheader here or there. You just don't want too many doubleheaders stacked up. Nelson Cruz, you know, didn't get to hit much because they're in the National League, and you want him to get back into rhythm, stuff like that. But every team goes through that. You see, Adam Thielen just signed a contract extension with the Minnesota Vikings for $64 million.
Oh, really?
The kid from Detroit Lakes and Minnesota State Mankato that they just invited to a spring tryout.
Yes.
Back in the day, just signed for $64 million. $35 million guaranteed, could go over $70 million if he hits all the incentives.
Well, he had a great year last year.
And last few years. And yeah. I just saw him the other night at the championship game over at the U.S. Bank Stadium. He and his wife were watching. I was walking up the steps, and all of a sudden somebody nudged me, and it was Adam and his wife, and I wish I'd have known, man. I'd have ordered some popcorn or something.
Said, did you hit him up? Bill. Hit him up for a loan?
Didn't know at the time. Otherwise, like I said, he had that vendor come over and said, give me three hot dogs and three Cokes just for me and give it to Adam.
They seem like a fun couple. I follow them on Twitter, and they always have some fun stuff that they post
with
their
kids.
Yeah,
his wife is local and from Eagan, Minnesota, and he has a workout facility out there in Lakeville. And to watch him. And obviously this has been stated many times, when he was on the practice squad, when he just got on the team out there, and I'd sit with him at Winter Park, and we'd talk about how are things at Minnesota State, Mankato, and will they win this year? And I'd talk to him about impressions that he had, like, of practicing with these big-time players, you know, and, and being nervous and, you know, trying not to drop balls and all those things. I didn't know that he was going to – and then all of a sudden he gets a shot at the special teams. You go, good for him, man. And then he gets a special teams touchdown. You go, you know what? If nothing else, for the rest of his life, he knows he scored a touchdown in the NFL. Well, little did we know, right?
Yeah. Yes. Wow.
Let's talk a little soccer. Allianz Field, stadium, is supposed to open tomorrow. I mean, will the snow affect it? And are you heading out?
First of all, you were right to ask me because I was out there this morning with Bill McGuire, the owner, and it was beautiful because only in Minnesota, right, it was snowing, coming straight down, no wind, and at the same time, they were cutting the grass. How often do you see that, right?
Wow.
Schizophrenic.
Yeah, with a ton of snow up against the sides. And obviously, it was a fly in the ointment in terms of, you know, you prepare for the opener, prepare for the opener, and all of a sudden, guess what? You got another great big expenditure called. You got to clean this stadium up right now. I said, well, look at it this way. You got it out of the way. You know, the fire drill, you'll get through it, and you'll know exactly how to handle this. Because, you know, it's natural grass. So you can't just go out and snow blow it and drive over it like you would turf. So they got to be careful with it. It comes from Colorado, and it's they heat it underneath at 65 degrees and all those things. That's the science of it. And I could just tell, and he said, you know, we know things aren't going to be perfect. And I thought, you know, this is so hard for him, Bill, because he's been a CEO and made $100 million a year and all those things. And this is one that he doesn't have as much control over because his Mother Nature and everything else. But it'll be fine. Just play the first game and then get it on. But it's a beautiful complex, to your point, Jordan. It's got...
hey, Mike, we're out of time, but who's on the show tonight?
All kinds of people, including Bill McGuire and much more.
You'll hear more about it then tonight on Mikey's show.
Thanks, Mikey.
You got it.
Have a good weekend, sir.
You too.
All right, you're the best. When we get back in just a few minutes... after the news, I got to turn my page here. Georgetown students want to pay reparations. Good idea. Let's talk.